trap. His equipment had, of course, been destroyed with his van. If the thought had truly been that he should catch his dinner easily and well, that would have enraged him. Since his intention now was to stall, it only made him peevish. The bastard things had destroyed his van, after all. Ramon scrounged through the underbrush for the raw material of a snare. Whip vine, a few longish sticks seasoned enough to break, but green enough to bend first. A handful of Sao Paulo's nut equivalent, a sticky bowl that smelled of honey and resin, to act as bait. He was annoyed to find that all this hurt his fingers, which had been as tough as old leather. The syrup bath in which the aliens had soaked him must have melted away the calluses on his hands as well, leaving his fingers ill-prepared for real work. Through it all, Manek watched in silence. Ramon found himself explaining the process as he went. The pressure of the thing's unspeaking regard made him jumpy. When at last Ramon had the snares in place, he led Manek back into the underbrush to wait for some unsuspecting animal to happen by. It was unlikely to take long. The animals this far north were naive, unfamiliar with traps, never having been hunted by humans before, and so were easy to catch. Still, he would stall for as long as he could before checking the traps. They sat well in among the branches, Manek watching him with what seemed sometimes like profound curiosity, sometimes like impatience, but was likely an emotion Ramon had never felt or heard named.
"The food thing comes to you to be ended," Manek said in its sad, sonorous voice.
"Not if you keep making a fucking racket," Ramon whispered. "It isn't as if we're getting its consent first."
"It is unknowing. This is nidutori."
"I don't know what that means," Ramon said.
"Interesting," Manek said. "You understand purpose and killing, but not nidutori. You are a disturbing creature."
"That's what they tell me," Ramon said.
"Under what circumstances do you kill?"
"Me?" Manek was silent. Ramon felt a stab of annoyance at the thing for spoiling the hunt, even as he reminded himself that it was all a play for time. He sighed. "Men kill for all sorts of reasons. If someone's going to kill you, you kill them first. Or if they're fucking your wife. Or sometimes men will be so poor they have to rob someone for money. That can go too far. Or if someone declares war, then soldiers go and kill each other. Or sometimes you just walk into the wrong bar and start acting like a cabron, where the wrong bastard can hear you, and he kills you for it." For a moment, he was back in the El Rey. He couldn't recall any more what precisely it was the European had said that started things. The details were all misty and uncertain, like a half-remembered dream. There had been a pachinko machine, its tiny steel balls bouncing crazily against the network of pins, and a woman with straight black hair. It hadn't been anything the man had said to Ramon. No one had liked the pendejo. Everyone had wanted to crack the man's ass the other way, but Ramon had been the one to do it. "Why did you kill him?" Ramon shivered. Manek's steady gaze seemed to peer into his soul, as if every truth and lie in Ramon's long, sorry life were written on his face. A sudden rush of shame possessed him.
"You have declared war on the food thing," Manek intoned, and Ramon's sudden guilt vanished.
Manek no more understood him than a dog could read a news feed. With an act of will, he refrained from laughing.
"No," Ramon said. "It's just an animal. I need food. It is food. It's not killing, only hunting."
"The food thing is not killed?"
"Yes, okay, fine. You kill animals to eat them if you need food," Ramon said. Then a moment later, "and also if they're fucking your wife."
"I understand," the alien said, and lapsed into silence.
They waited as the sun rose higher in the perfect blue sky.
Manek ate some of his eik, which turned out to be a brown paste, the consistency of molasses, with a thick, vinegary scent. Ramon scratched at the place in his neck where the sahel anchored in his flesh, and tried to ignore the emptiness of his belly. The hunger grew quickly, though, and in spite of his good intentions about stalling as long as he could, it was less than 2 hours later that he rose and walked out to check his catch. Two grasshoppers, almost identical to the locusts of Earth, but warm-blooded and able to nurse their young from tiny, fleshy nipples at the joints of their carapace. And a gordita, one of the fuzzy, round marsupials that the colonists called the little fat ones of the Virgin. The gordita had died badly, biting itself in its frenzy. Its spiky fur was already black with thick, tarry blood. Manek looked on with interest as Ramon removed the animals from the snares.
It is difficult to think of this as having anything to do with food, it said. Why do the creatures strangle themselves for you? Is it their tatacroida?
No, Ramon said as he strung the bodies on the length of carrying twine. It's not their tatacroida. It's just something that happened to them. He found himself staring at his hands as he worked, and for some reason his hands made him uneasy. He shrugged the feeling away. Don't your people hunt for food?
The hunt is not for food, Manek said flatly. The hunt is wasted on creatures such as these. How can they appreciate it? Their brains are much too small.
My stomach is also too small, but it will appreciate them. He stood up, swinging the dead animals over his shoulder.
Do you swallow the creatures now?
Manek asked. First they must be cooked.
Cooked?
Burned over a fire.
Fire, Manek repeated. Uncontrolled combustion. Proper food does not require such preparation. You are a primitive creature. These steps waste time. Time which might be better used to fulfill your tatacroida. I euthaloi does not interfere with the flow.
Ramon shrugged. I cannot eat your food, monster, and I cannot eat these raw. He held the carcasses up for inspection. If we are to get on with me exercising my function, I need to make a fire. Help me gather sticks. Back at the clearing, Ramon improvised a bow starter and started a small cook fire. When the flames were crackling well, the alien turned to look at Ramon.
Combustion is proceeding, it said. What will you do now? I wish to observe this function cooking. Was that an edge of distaste in the alien's voice?
He suddenly had a flash of how odd the process must seem to Manek. Catching and killing an animal, cutting its pelt off and pulling out its internal organs, dismembering it, toasting the dead carcass over a fire and then eating it. For a moment, it seemed a grotesque and ghoulish thing to do, and it had never seemed like that before. He stared down at the gordita in his hand, and then at his hand itself, sticky with dark blood and the subtle feeling of wrongness he'd been fighting off all morning, intensified once again. First I must skin them, he said resolutely, pushing down the uneasiness, before I can cook them.
They have skin already, do they not?
Manek said. Ramon surprised himself by smiling. I must take their skin off, and their fur. Cut it off with a knife, you see? Way out here. I'll just throw the pelts away, eh? Waste of money. But then, grasshopper pelts aren't worth much anyway. Manek's snout twitched, and it prodded at the grasshoppers with a foot.
This seems inefficient. Does it not waste a large portion of the food, cutting it off and throwing it away? All of the rind?
I don't eat fur.
Ah, Manek said.
It moved up close behind Ramon and sank to the ground, its legs bending backward grotesquely.
It will be interesting to observe this function. Proceed.
I need a knife, Ramon said. When Manek said nothing, he added, The man would have a knife.
You will require one also.
Well, I can't do this with my teeth, Ramon said. Wordlessly, the alien plucked a cylinder from its belt and handed it to Ramon. When Ramon turned it over in bafflement, Manek reached across and did something to the cylinder, and a 6-inch silver wire sprang out stiffly. Ramon took the strange knife and began cutting the gordita. The wire slid easily through the flesh. Perhaps it was the hunger that focused Ramon so intently on his task, because it wasn't until he had set the gordita on a spit and begun on the first grasshopper that he realized what the alien had done. It had handed him a weapon. The thing had made its mistake. Now it would die for it. He fought the sudden rush of adrenaline, struggling to keep the blade from wobbling in his hands, to keep his hands from shaking. Bent over the careful task of digging out the grasshopper's rear gills, he glanced at Manek. The alien seemed to have noticed nothing. The problem was, where to strike it? Stabbing it in the body was too great a risk. He didn't know where the vital organs were, and he couldn't be sure of striking a killing blow. Manek was larger and stronger than he was. In a protracted fight, Ramon knew he would lose. It had to be done swiftly. The throat, he decided, with a rush of exhilaration that was almost like flying. He would slash the knife as deep across the alien's throat as he could. The thing had a mouth, and it breathed, after all, so there had to be an air passage in the neck somewhere. If he could sever that, it would only be a matter of remaining alive long enough for the alien to choke to death on its own blood. It was a thin chance, but he would take it. "Look here," he said, picking up the body of the gordita. With its legs and scales cut away, its flesh was soft and pink as raw tuna. Manek leaned closer, as Ramon had hoped, its eyes trained on the dead flesh in his left hand, ignoring the blade in his right. The heady elation of violence filled him, as if he was in the street outside a bar in Diego Town. The monsters didn't know that this thing they'd captured knew how to be a monster, too. He waited until Manek turned its head a little to the side, to better squint at the gordita, exposing the mottled black and yellow flesh of its throat, and then he struck. Abruptly, he was sprawled on his back on the ground, staring up into the violet sky. His stomach muscles were knotted, and he was breathing in harsh little gasps. The pain had hit him like a stone giant's fist, crumpled him, and thrown him aside. It had been over in an eye blink, too quick to be remembered, but his body still ached and twitched with the shock. He had dropped the knife. "You fool," he thought.
"Interesting," Manek said. "Why did you do that? I pose you no danger, and so you need not defend yourself. I am not food for you, and so you need not kill me to eat. You have not declared war upon me. I have not gone to a bar, nor do I have money. I have not fucked your wife. And still you experience a drive to kill. What is the nature of that drive?"
Ramon would have laughed if he could. It was comic and tragic and deserving of his despairing rage. He levered himself up to sitting. Blood was smeared on his hands and chest from writhing on the corpse of the gordita.
"You," Ramon began, "you knew..."
Manek's quills rose and fell. The evil, implacable orange of its eyes seemed to glow in the soft light that filtered through the forest canopy.
"The Sahel participates in your flow," it said. "It will not permit actions on your part that would interfere with your Tatakroida. You cannot harm me in any fashion.
You can read my mind, then.
The Sahel can prevent action that is Aubrey before the action takes place.
I do not understand. Read my mind.
You know what I'm thinking. You know what I'm going to do before I do it.
No. To drink from first intentions would disturb the flow and affect your function. It is only when your intention expresses Aubrey that you are corrected.
Ramon wiped his eyes with the back of his hand.
So you can't tell what I'm thinking, but you can tell what I'm going to do?
Manek considered him in silence, and then said,
Every movement is a cascade from intent to action. The Sahel drinks from far up the cascade. The intention to act precedes the action. So you cannot act before I am aware of the action you are taking. Attempts to harm me cannot be completed and will be punished. You are a primitive being not to know this.
It tilted its head to stare more closely at him.
Please return to the issue at hand. What is the nature of that drive? Why do you wish to kill me?
Because a man is supposed to be free, Ramon said, pushing ineffectually at the thick, fleshy leash at his throat. You're holding me prisoner.
The alien shifted its head from one side to the other, as if the words meant nothing to it, and were literally falling from its ears. Manek lifted him easily and set him on his feet. To Ramon's shame and humiliation, the alien gently placed the wire knife back in his hand.
Continue the function, Manek said. You were flaying the corpse of the small animal.
Ramon turned the silver cylinder slowly, shaking his head. He was unmanned. He could no more defeat this thing than an infant child could best his father. He was so little threat to it that it would hand him a weapon with total unconcern. He felt the urge to drive the knife into his own chest and end this humiliation. But he pushed the thoughts away before the Sahel could exact its punishment. He sharpened another small stick, using the alien knife, impaled the small bodies upon it, and held the raw meat over the flame. In the beginning, he kept the gordita and the grasshoppers far enough back that the cooking went slowly. But as the scent of grease and cooked meat woke his own belly, he let the branch dip. The thin, stringy meat tasted better than Ramon had remembered. It was salty and had a rich, earthy taste. When he had stripped the small corpses to their thin, yellow bones, he wiped his hands on his robe and stood up. Let's go. I have to find fresh water.
The seared flesh is not sufficient,
Ramon spat. I can live for weeks without food, he said. No water, and I'll die in days. It rose and let Ramon lead the way through the forest to a cold, rushing stream, foaming white as it broke over stream-bed rocks. This far north, the glaciers fed the streams and eventually the great river, the Rio Embudo, that passed through Fiddler's Jump. As he squatted, cupping the numbing cold water to his lips, he imagined setting a message in a bottle to bob its way down to civilization.
Trapped by monsters, send help.
He might as well plan to make a flock of flapjacks fly him back to Diego Town. Dreaming was no better than dreaming. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and sat back.
This is all, then? Manek said. Consume dead flesh and water. Emit piss. These are the channels that constrain the man.
Well, he'll have to take a dump sometimes. Like pissing, sort of. And he'll sleep.
You will do these things, Manek said.
Ramon stood, turning back toward the camp and the flying box. The alien followed him.
You can't just command those things, Ramon said. It's not like I'm some kind of pinchy machine that you can press a button and I fall asleep. Things come in their own time.
And the dumping?
Ramon felt a surge of rage. The thing was an idiot. He was enslaved by a race of morons.
It comes in its own time, too, Ramon said.
Then we will observe the time,
Manek said. Fine.
While we observe, you will explain free.
Ramon paused, looking back over his shoulder. Light dappled the alien's swirling skin, an effect like camouflage.
You will kill to be free, Manek said. What is free?
Free is not with a fucking thing sticking in my neck, Ramon said. Free is able to do what I want, when I want, without having to dance to anyone's fucking tune.
Is this dance customary?
Christ, Ramon yelled, wheeling on his captor. Free is being your own goddamn man. Free is not answering to anybody for anything. Not your boss, not your woman, not the pinche governor and his pinche little army. A man who's free makes his own path where he wants to make it, and no one can stand in his way. No one. Are you too fucking stupid to understand that? Ramon was breathing hard as if he'd been running, his cheeks hot with blood. The hot orange eyes shifted over him. The Sahel pulsed once, and a shudder of fear ran through Ramon, the presentiment of pain that never came.
Free is to be without constraint.
Yes, Ramon said, mincing the words as if he were speaking to a child he disliked. Free is to be without constraint.
And this is possible?
It asked. Thoughts and memories flickered through Ramon's mind. Elena. The times he'd had to scrape by without liquor in order to make the payment on his van. The police. The European. No, Ramon said. It's not. But you aren't a real man if you don't try. Come on. You're holding me back. If you're going to keep this fucking thing in me, the least you can do is keep up when I walk. At the camp, Ramon lapsed into silence, and the alien allowed him that. It seemed thoughtful and introspective itself, as far as one could judge that in a creature that looked the way it did. As the day shifted toward night, Ramon did indeed feel the call to relieve himself, and was humiliated as the alien looked on. How about dinner, eh? Ramon said briskly afterward, trying to shake off his shame. More food. It's too late to go on today anyway.
You've just emptied your bowels, Manek said. Now you will fill them up again.
That's what it is to be alive, Ramon said. Eating and shitting. They never stop until you're dead. Dead men don't shit or eat, but living men have to, or they soon stop living. A thought struck him, and he glanced slyly at the alien. The man will have to eat, too. The man you're chasing. You may as well learn how he'll do it. I'll show you how to fish.
He will not set snares, as you did earlier.
He will, Ramon said, but he'll set them in the water. Here, I'll show you. Once the alien understood what Ramon needed, it cooperated. They rigged a crude fishing pole from a thin, dry limb snapped off a nearby ice root. And, after a tedious consultation with Manek, who took a long time to understand what Ramon wanted, a length of pale, soft, malleable wire supplied by the alien. A stiffer sort of wire was shaped into a hook, and Ramon stamped along the shore, turning over rocks until he found a fat orange gret beetle to use for bait. Manek's snout twitched with sudden interest as Ramon impaled the insect. Ramon led the alien to a likely-looking spot on the side of the stream and dropped the line. As he fished, Ramon stole glances at Manek from time to time. The alien stood and watched the water. For all the impatience it sometimes showed about getting on with their task, it seemed perfectly content to stand there, immobile and untiring, for as long as it might take. Halfway across the stream, Ramon glimpsed a flash of blue as a fish leapt from the water, but nothing took his bait. Never the most patient of men, he began to grow restive. To occupy the time, he began to whistle a silly little tune that Elena had taught him early in their time together, before the fighting had grown so bad. He could not remember the words that went with it, but that didn't matter. The song made him think of Elena, her long, dark hair and her quick hands, calloused by endless hours in her little vegetable garden. She was a small, dark woman, very pretty, though her face was dotted with the craters left by some childhood disease. Sometimes Ramon would trace the marks with his fingertips, unconsciously, and then Elena would look away. "Stop," she would say, "stop, you remind me of how ugly I am." And then, if he hadn't had too much to drink, he would say, "No, no, they're not so bad. You are very beautiful." But Elena would never believe him.
"What is that sound you are making?"
Manek demanded, shattering Ramon's reverie. He frowned. "I was whistling, monster. A little song."
"Whistling," the alien repeated. "Is this another language? I do not understand, although I hear a structure, an ordering. Explain the meaning of what you were saying."
"I wasn't saying anything," Ramon said. "It was music. Your people, they don't have music."
"Music," Manek said. "Ah, ordered sound. I comprehend. You derive pleasure from the sequencing of certain patterns. We don't have music, but it is an interesting mathematical function. To order that which is random enhances the flow. You may resume whistling music, man."
Ramon did not accept the alien's invitation. He pulled in his line and threw it in again. The first cast brought up something Ramon had never seen. That wasn't odd. There were new creatures caught in the nets at Diego Town and Swan's Neck every week. So little yet was known about Sao Paulo. This was a bloated, gray bottom dweller whose scales were dotted by white, vaguely pustulant nodules. It hissed at him as he pulled the hook free, and with a sense of disgust he threw it back into the water. It vanished with a plop.
"Why did you throw the food away?"
Manek asked. "It was monstrous," Ramon said, "like you." He found another beetle, and they resumed their watch on the river as night slowly gathered around them. The sky above the forest canopy shifted toward the startling violet of the Sao Paulo sunset. Auroras danced green and blue and gold. Watching them, Ramon felt for an instant the profound peace that the open wilderness always gave him. Even captive and enslaved, even with his flesh pierced by the Sahel, the immense dancing sky was beautiful and a thing of comfort. A few minutes later, Ramon finally caught a fat, white bladefish with vivid scarlet fins. As he hauled it out of the water, he caught sight of Manek's curiously watching face and shook his head. "You don't have music, and you don't eat real food," he mused. "I think you are a very sad sort of creature." "What about sex? Do you have that much, at least? Do you fuck? What about that? Are you a boy or a girl?"
"Boy," the alien said. "Girl, these concepts do not apply to us. Sexual reproduction is primitive and inefficient. We have transcended this."
"Too bad," Ramon said. "That's taking transcendence too far. Still, at least I suppose that means I don't have to worry about you sneaking into the lean-to with me tonight, eh?" He grinned at the look of incomprehension on the alien's face and walked back to camp, Manek pacing silently at his side. There, he quickly rebuilt the cook fire and roasted the fish gently, briefly wishing he had some garlic or habanero powder to rub on it. Still, the flesh was warm and succulent, and when he had eaten his fill and smoked some strips of the fish and wrapped them in yerba leaves for the next day, he sat back on his heels and yawned. He felt very full and oddly contented, despite his perilous situation and inhuman companion. There were no more questions, no more obscure demands. When at last his body began to feel heavy, he pulled himself into the rough lean-to that the policeman had made, cradled his head on his arms, and let himself drift, always half aware that the thing was nearby and watching. Let it watch him. Every hour it spent here with him was another chance for the stranger who had been Ramon's pursuer and was now his prey. The man who the aliens hadn't made into a puppet, who hadn't killed the European. The one who was still free. Chapter 8. The next day dawned cold and clear. Ramon woke slowly, drifting into consciousness so gradually that he was never quite sure when he passed the dividing line between sleep and wakefulness. Even when he had come fully awake, he remained very still, wrapped in his cloak, savoring the sounds and smells of morning. It was snug and warm within the folds of his alien garment, but the outside air was crisp and chilly on his face, and fragrant with the distinctive cinnamon tang scent of the ice root forest. Ramon could hear the rush and gurgle of the nearby stream, the whistling calls of small birds up with the sun, and off in the distance, the odd booming cry of a descamisado, returning to its lair in the trees after a long night of hunting. Although his body ached from sleeping on the hard, stony ground, and his bladder was full enough to be painful, Ramon was reluctant to stir. It was peaceful lying there. Peaceful and familiar. The discomforts were old friends. How many times had he woken alone in the forest like this, after a hard day of prospecting? Many, he thought. Too many to count. Too many to recall. It was almost possible to pretend that this was just another morning, like all those others, that nothing had changed, that it had all been a bad dream. He held that thought closely for a while, reluctant to release it. It was a lie, but it was a comforting lie, so he took his time in waking. He opened his eyes carefully, and found himself staring off through the opening of the lean-to toward the west. The tall ice roots seemed to have an azure glow playing about their tops, where dawn had broached them. Beyond them, to the far southwest, he saw a handful of bright stars, fading now as the sun came up. Fiddler's Bow, the distinctive northern constellation from which Fiddler's Jump took its name, since that was the southernmost point from which the bow could be seen. He watched until the last bright star had been swallowed by the sky. Then he stirred, and the illusion of safety and normality died as he felt the Sahel pull against the soft flesh of his throat. Ramon pushed himself reluctantly to a sitting position. Manek still stood outside the lean-to, beads of dew on its swirling, oil-sheen skin. Its quills were stirring in the morning wind. Seemingly, it hadn't moved since he had gone to sleep, standing still as a stone, watching him throughout the night. Ramon suppressed a shiver at the thought. As Ramon groaned and climbed to his feet, he saw that the alien's eyes were open, and said, "What, monster? You're waiting for something?"
"Yes," it said. "You have returned to a functional state. Sleep is now complete."
Ramon scratched his belly under the robe, and yawned until he felt his jaw might dislocate. Twigs and scraps of leaf had found their way into the lean-to and knotted themselves in his hair. He combed them out with his fingers. Other than that, the shelter had been solid, well-crafted, dry, and just the right size. The policeman had even left a layer of ice root fronds under the bedding to reflect up the heat of his body in the night. He'd spent some time in the wild.
"The sleep is now complete," the alien repeated.
"I heard you the first time," Ramon said. "Yes, the sleep is fucking complete." "Your kind, they do not sleep either, eh?"
"Sleep is a dangerous state. It takes you outside the flow. It is an unnecessary cessation of function. The need for sleep is a flaw in your nature. Only inefficient creatures need to be unconscious half their lives."
Yeah, Ramon said, yawning. Well, you should try it sometime.
The sleep is complete, Manek said. It is time to start fulfilling your function.
Not so fast. I've got to piss.
You made piss before?
Well, I'm an ongoing fucking process, Ramon said, misquoting a priest he'd heard once preaching in the plaza at Diego Town. The sermon had been about the changing nature of the soul. The man who was delivering it, red-faced and sweaty. Ramon and Pael Dominguez had thrown sugared almonds at him. It wasn't something he'd thought of in years, and yet he could recall it now as clearly as if it had happened moments before. He wondered whether the alien goo in which he'd been incarcerated might have done something to his memory. He had heard that men waking from stasis sometimes suffered episodes of amnesia or powerful dislocation. Now, standing before a mesh-barked pseudo-pine and pissing at its base, Ramon found more strange rushes of memory returning to him. Martin Casaus, his first friend when he'd come to Diego Town, had lived by the port in a two-room apartment with butter-yellow bamboo flooring that peeled up at the corners. They'd gotten drunk there every night for a month, singing and sucking down beer. Martin had told him stories about being out in the forest, working as a trapper, tricking a chupacabra into a spear pit with fresh meat. And Ramon had made up sexual exploits from his time in Mexico, each one more lurid and improbable than the last. Martin's landlady had come once and threatened to have them both arrested, and Ramon had exposed himself. He remembered the old woman's shocked expression, the way her hands had fluttered, unsure whether his penis was an insult to her or a threat. It was like seeing a recording of it, a flashback as powerful as the experience, and then gone again, and only a memory. Ramon scratched his belly idly, fingertips moving over the smooth curve of his skin. Poor old Martin. He wondered what had happened to the bastard. Nothing, he had to imagine, worse than what he himself was going through now. You don't piss either, do you? Ramon said, shaking the last drops from his penis.
The avoiding of waste is necessary only because you ingest improper foods,
Manek replied.
Ike provides nourishment without waste. It is so designed in order to increase efficiency. Your food is full of poisons and inert substances that your body cannot absorb. This is why you must make piss and dump. This is primitive and unnatural.
Ramon chuckled. Primitive maybe, he said, but you are the one who goes against nature. We are animals, both of us. Animals sleep and eat other animals and shit and fuck. You do none of those things. So who is the unnatural one, eh? Manek looked down on him.
A being possessed of rete hue has the capacity to be more than an animal, it said. If an ability exists, it must be used. Therefore you are unnatural, because you cling to the primitive, although you possess the ability to transcend that state.
Clinging to the primitive can be a lot of fun, Ramon started to say. But Manek, who seemed to be growing impatient, cut him off.
We have begun with making piss, it said, and we have returned to this place in the cycle. We are now prepared. You will enter the Unea. We will proceed.
Unea? Manek paused.
The flying box, it said.
Oh, but I need to eat still. You can't have a man go without breakfast.
You can continue 4 weeks without food. This is what you reported in the night.
Doesn't mean I'd want to, Ramon said. You want me working at my best. I've got to eat. Even machines need to be refueled to work.
No more delays,
Manek said, fingering the Sahel ominously.
We go now.
Ramon considered objecting. claiming that there was some further biological function that humanity required. He could spit for an hour or two, just to take more time. But Manek seemed resolute, and he didn't want it to resort to the Sahel in order to get him to obey.
"Okay, okay, and I'm coming. Just wait a second."
Ramon had done what he could for the policeman. Any bastard who'd come out to arrest him should be fucking grateful for what he'd done so far. Ramon snatched up the leaf-wrapped strips of smoked fish he'd prepared the night before, and followed the alien back to its bone-white box. A cold breakfast in transit would have to do. His belly lurched as the strange ship took to the air. They flew south and west. Behind them, to the north, were the tall peaks of the Sierra Hueso, their upper slopes now obscured by wet, churning gray cloud. It was snowing back there, behind, above. South, the world flattened into forested lowland, then tilted down toward the southern horizon, steaming and slopping like a soup plate, puddled with marshes on the edge of sight. Also on the edge of sight, from up here, only a thin silver ribbon in a world of green and blue and orange trees and black stone, was the Rio Embudo, the main channel of the great river system that drained the Sierra Hueso and all the northlands. Hundreds of kilometers to the southwest, Fiddler's Jump sat high on its rocky, red-veined bluffs above the same river, its ramshackle wooden hotels and houses full of miners and trappers and lumberjacks, its docks crowded with ore barges and vast log floats soon to be launched downstream to Swan's Neck. It was there, to the safety and lights and raucous humanity of Fiddler's Jump, that the policeman was almost surely headed. How would he do it? Anybody who could construct a lean-to as well as the policeman had would have no trouble constructing a raft out of the materials ready to hand. Once he reached the Rio Embudo and built his raft, he'd be off down the river to Fiddler's Jump, much easier and faster than walking through the thick, tangled forest. It was where he would have gone, and what he would have done had he been stranded out here without a van, desperate and alone. And he was sure that the policeman would do the same. The aliens had been smart to use him as their hunting dog after all. He did know what the policeman would do, where he would go. He could find him. How long would he have to stall to give the policeman time to get away? Could he have reached the river yet? From the foothills of the Sierra Hueso, it was a long way on foot through rough terrain. On the other hand, a number of days had gone by. It would be close. Below them now was another thick forest of ice root, tall, gaunt trees with translucent blue-white needles, like a million tiny icicles. They flew on. Here, a great tower of Babel Hive had pushed up through the trees, the strange, metallic-looking insects, like living jewelry, swarming up to menace them in defense of their queen as they passed. A clearing empty but for the wide, six-legged carcass of a vaquero, the horse-like body half-eaten by a chupacabra and left to rot. The ice roots again. They were circling. How did Manek intend to find the policeman?
"What are we looking for?" Ramon called over the sound of the wind rushing past them. "You can't see anything from up here. You got sensors on this thing?"
"We are aware of much," Manek said.
"We? I'm not aware of a fucking thing."
"The Yunea participates in my flow. The Sahel participates. It is your nature that you must fail to participate. That is why you are an occasion of great sorrow. But it is your Tata Croida, and therefore it is to be accepted."
"I don't want to participate in your goddamn flow," Ramon said. "I just asked if you had some kind of sensors on this thing. I wasn't asking you to put out on the first date."
"Are these noises needed?" Manek asked.
If Ramon had had any faith that the aliens experienced emotions a human being might comprehend, he would have said that the thing sounded annoyed.
"The search is the expression
of your Tata Croida, whatever the fuck that is," Ramon said. "Whatever you say,
Since I'm not able to do this flow thing, maybe this is the best I can do, eh? Make some friendly conversation? The quills on my neck's head rose and fell rapidly. Its thick head jounced from one side to another. It turned to him, and the slats of the bone-pale box thickened, the sound of wind lessening.
"You are correct," Manek said. "This spitting of air is the primary communication available to you. It is right that I should attempt to engage your higher functions to aid you in avoiding Aubrey. And if I better understand the mechanism of an uncoordinated self, the nature of the man will also become clearer."
"That half sounded like an apology, monster," Ramon said.
"This is a strange term. I have not fallen into Aubrey. I have no reason to express regret."
"Yeah, fine. Be like that."
"But if you wish to speak, I will participate in this fashion. I do indeed have sensors. They are of the nature of the Unea, as the drinking of your flow is of the nature of the Sahel, or the management and direction of this form,"
and the alien gestured at itself,
"is mine. The man, however, is much like the other creatures, and discovering the channels which he has been bound into is subtle."
Ramon shrugged. Their best bet of catching the policeman was to head west for the Rio Embudo, get well south of where he could have reached on foot, and then wait there by the riverside until the bastard came floating by on his raft. But if the alien didn't see it that way, Ramon felt no particular impulse to enlighten his captor. If the alien wanted to swing uselessly back and forth all day like a missionary's balls, Ramon was fine with that.
"What are you going to do with the poor fucker when you catch him?" "Correct the illusion of his existence," Manek said. "To be observed cannot happen. The illusion that it has happened is prime contradiction, gesu, the negation of reality. If we were to be seen, we would not be what we are. We would never have been what we are. That which cannot be found cannot be found. This is contradiction. It must be resolved."
"That doesn't make sense. The man, he's already seen you."
"He is still within illusion. If he is prevented from reaching his kind, the information cannot diffuse. He will have been corrected. The illusion of his existence will have been denied. If he is real, however, we cannot be."
Ramon unwrapped the yerba leaf, sucked the meat from his strip of smoked fish, then dropped the empty bone on the slats at his feet.
"You know, monster, to make as little sense as you, I have to drink for half a night."
"I do not understand."
"That's the point, cabron."
"Your consumption of liquid affects your communication. Was your time at the camp insufficient to express this?"
"That was river water," Ramon said impatiently. "Liquor, I mean. Drink liquor. I've got the only devil in hell that's never heard of hard drink."
"Explain to me hard drink."
Ramon scratched his belly. The smooth skin under his fingertips seemed momentarily odd. How could he explain drinking, really drinking, to a thing with a half-crazed devil's mind? "There's a thing. It's a liquid," Ramon said. "It's called alcohol. You get it from things fermenting. Fermenting. Breaking down. Potatoes make vodka, and grapes make wine, and grain makes beer. And when you drink it, when a man drinks it, it lifts him up out of himself. You understand? All the things he's supposed to be, they don't bother him so much anymore. All the petty fucking shit that ties him up, it lets loose a little. Piss. I don't know. This is like telling a virgin what it's like to fuck.
It loosens bindings, Manek said. It makes you free.
Memory assaulted Ramon again. The world vanished. He was 14. 2 long years stretching out before him until he would elect to join a job gang and get off Earth. August brought thunderstorms to the mountains of Mexico, great white clouds that went gray-black at the base. Having come down from his tiny cliff-top pueblo, Ramon was living in an older boy's shack in a squatter's village on the north slope of a mesa near Mexico City. The day of his memory, he'd been sitting on the misshapen mass of rotten wood and worn plastic that he and the older boy jokingly called their front porch, watching the clouds form and rise toward the sky. The storm would reach them by night, Ramon had guessed. He was trying to judge whether the shack could withstand another hard storm, or if it would collapse under wind and water, when the older boy appeared, sauntering down the thin street of mud and rocks that separated one line of hovels from the next. He had a girl with him, his arm around her waist. He had a bottle in the other. Ramon didn't ask where he'd found either of them. He remembered the astringent fire of the gin, the fascination and repulsion of listening to the older boy and the girl fuck while he sat outside, drinking and counting the seconds between lightning flashes and thunder. By the time the rain came, the older boy had passed out, and Ramon, drunk, had split the last of the gin with the girl, and she'd let him fuck her too. The wind had rattled the walls. Rain leaked in, running down the windows in rivulets while he bent over her, thrusting, and she looked away. It was the best night Ramon remembered having on Earth, possibly the best night he'd had since. He couldn't remember the older boy's name now, but he could see the mole on the girl's neck, just above her collarbone, the scar on her lip where it had split badly once and healed strangely. He only ever thought of her when he was drinking gin, and he preferred whiskey. Manek's arm touched his shoulder, steadying him. Ramon batted it away without thinking.
"There was turbulence," Manek said. "You gained focus, but its reference was obscure."
"I remembered something," Ramon said. "That's all. One time, when I was drinking, when it made me free."
"Ah, fidelity continues to increase. This is an excellent thing."
"Your tatacroida gains focus."
"But you are still unflowing."
"Yeah, well, and you're still fucking ugly. You wanted to know about drinking hard liquor? Here. Hard liquor makes a man able to stand the things he can't stand. It makes him free the way nothing else can. When a man's drunk, it's like being alone. Everything's possible. Everything's good. It's like having lightning in your hands. There's nothing that makes a man feel so complete."
"So hard drink is good. It increases flow pathways and focuses intention. It makes freedom, and this is among the man's central desires. To drink is to express virtue."
In the alleyway, the European sat down, hand to his belly. The crowd drew back. Ramon felt again the cold sense of having been betrayed by them.
"It's got its good points," he said. "Why are you asking me all these damn questions? Aren't you supposed to be hunting someone down?"
"I wish to participate in you," the alien said. "You cannot sense flow. These words are your only channel."
The thing sounded like the ship psychiatrist from Ramon's Jump Out. Ramon lifted his hands, palms out, pushing the thing's attention away. "I'm tired of talking," Ramon said. "Leave me the fuck alone."
"You may require a period of assimilation,"
Manek agreed, as if they were talking about a lift tube that needed tuning. The alien turned away. Ramon leaned against the thin white slats of the box, peering out over the shimmering orange and black sea of leaves below them. If he hadn't been drunk, he probably wouldn't have killed the European. He would never have come out so far, the constabulary silently on his heels. But to be in Diego Town and not be drunk was unthinkable. As well tell him to fly a van without fuel, or dig a mine by hand. It was how he could stand people. Ramon was a drinker, and a good one, but the bottle didn't control him. When he was here, out in the world, alone and away from the press of humanity, he didn't need the whiskey, so he didn't drink it. A single bottle could last him a month in the field, and half a night in the city. He wasn't a drunk. That was his proof of it. The first sign he had that something had changed came when the flying box stopped suddenly, hovering silently in the air as if they'd been hung there by a rope from heaven. Ramon looked down, squinting against the early evening sun, but the trees below them seemed no different from any of the other 100,000 trees they'd flown over. "There's something?" Ramon demanded.
"Yes,"
Manek answered, but said nothing more. The flying box descended. This new camp was larger than the one they'd left. The lean-to was larger, big enough to sit up in, and a fire pit made of stones and sand held the remains of several fires. The fugitive might have remained here for a day if he'd kept the fire going the whole time, or several if he'd only used it to cook. Manek led the way, moving slowly across the small clearing, its head swaying back and forth, keeping time to some slow, internal music. Ramon trotted behind, led by his neck. A pile of sub-beetle shells glittered in the dapples of sunlight. A pile of flat fur pelts lay abandoned, one of them gnawed at and then ignored by some small, toothy scavenger. The gray-blue butt of a cigarette lay withered beside the lean-to. How far, Ramon wondered, had the policeman traveled? 3 days the man had been running before Manek had led Ramon into the hunt. Another day since. If the man had spent a single night at the first campsite, and two here, that meant he now had only 1 day's lead on them. Ramon silently cursed the cop for dawdling. Everything depended on the bastard getting to the river, floating away to the south, and bringing back help. The governor, the police, maybe even the Enya, and some alien security force from the Enya ships that would be arriving any day now. That would be best. Humanity's great alien patron species rolling through like moss-covered boulders and licking Manek to death. Ramon chuckled, but the alien ignored him, continuing its inspection. There were several places, Ramon saw, where the policeman had ventured out into the forest, and several where he had returned. Broken branches and scuffed, turned litter showed it as clearly as if he'd left signs. This was a base of operations, then. The man had some plan or thought deeper than simple flight. Perhaps something he was searching for. Could the constabulary have an emergency beacon hidden somewhere nearby? It seemed too great a coincidence, but the thought alone was enough to make Ramon's heart beat faster. Or perhaps the man was an idiot, and still thought himself the hunter and Ramon the game, in which case Manek would surely find him, kill him, and return Ramon to the sickening darkness and noise of the alien hive, never to be heard from again. Manek stopped at the lean-to and reached down, stirring the leaves the man had used as bedding. Something among the green and blue leaves tumbled, dirty white, and the black-red of old blood. Manek leaned forward and made a rapid clicking sound that Ramon interpreted as pleasure. Ramon scratched his elbow, vaguely uneased by the sense that something had gone wrong. "¿Qué es?" he asked. The alien lifted a scrap of cloth, a shirt sleeve soaked in blood. The cloth was wrinkled and bunched where it had been tied as a bandage or tourniquet, and then hardened as the blood dried. "Looks like you hit the poor pendejo pretty good," Ramon said, trying to sound pleased. Manek didn't reply, only dropped the bandage back into the disturbed litter. It paced off toward the fire pit, the sahel extending and narrowing, but still pulling Ramon to follow. Something glittered in the dirt beside the rough, gathered stones of the pit, silver and blue. The alien paused, considering it. Ramon walked up to the thing's side, and then, divided between wonder and fear, he knelt and put the tips of his fingers on the cigarette case that Elena had given him. "This is mine," he said softly.
"It is the artifact of the man," Manek said, as if agreeing.
"No," Ramon said. "No, this is mine. This belongs to me. The police. They couldn't have got this unless they found..." He half scrambled back to the lean-to, scooping up the blood-soaked sleeve. The cloth was rough canvas, designed to last for months in the field. The button at the sleeve's end was half shattered. "This is my shirt. The pendejo's wearing my shirt." Ramon turned to Manek, a sudden towering rage roaring in his ears. He waved the bloody cloth in his clenched fist. "Why does that fucking son of a bitch have my shirt?" The quills rose and fell on the huge alien's crest. Its oil-sheened skin swirled. Only the knowledge that the Sahel would visit him with unimaginable pain kept Ramon from attacking it. "Answer me!"
"I do not understand. The garment with which you were provided..."
"Is your shirt!" Ramon shouted, plucking at the alien robe. "You fucking devils made this. You make me wear it. This is my shirt! Mine! I wore it from Diego Town. I bought it. I wore it. It's mine! And some... Martin Casals appeared suddenly before his mind's eye, a memory as powerful and transporting as a drug flashback. Her name had been Liana, the one he'd told Diego about. She'd been a cook at the Los Rancheros Grill down by the river. Martin had thought he was in love with her, and for a week he'd made up poems that started by comparing her eyes to the stars and ended near dawn. And after a bottle of cheap whiskey, talking about what it would be like to fuck her. Ramon had seen her in the sleazy all-night bar they all called Rick's Café Américain, even though there was some other name on the alcohol license. Ramon had been drunk. He saw her again, black hair pulled back from an oval face, the lines at the corners of her mouth, the deep, saturated red of the wallpaper behind her. He'd seen her, and he'd remembered all the images he'd endured, all the fantasies Martine had spun of her body. When she'd looked up, caught his eye, it was like water flowing downhill. He hadn't had a choice. He'd just gone to her. Martine, before him now, had the sheet metal hook in his hand. Ramon dropped the bloody rag at Manek's feet, his hand going to his belly. Martin's hand had looked flayed and skinless, but the blood had been Ramon's. The pain had been hideous, the bleeding so bad Ramon had felt it in his crotch and thought he'd pissed himself. He opened the alien robe, half expecting the Martin of his memory to swing again, to cut him further. Though when it had actually happened, the man had broken down weeping. Ramon's fingers touched a smooth, almost unblemished belly. The thick, knobby scar was gone, only a hairline of white in its place. He realized now that he'd known it. His fingers had kept straying to the missing wound, his body knowing better than his mind that something was missing. The roughness of the alien cloth against his skin, the calluses gone from his fingertips and feet. Slowly, he pulled back his sleeve. The scar he'd gotten in the machete fight with Chulo Lopez at the bar outside Little Dog. The trails of puckered white flesh that Elena's fingertips opened and reopened when they tore at each other during half-crazed sex were gone. There were no cigarette stains on his fingers. None of the small nicks and discolorations and calluses that were the legacy of a lifetime working with one's hands. Over the years, his arms had been burned almost black by the sun. But now his skin was smooth and unblemished and pale brown as an eggshell.
an awareness, half buried, rose in him, and he went cold. He had not been breathing in that tank. His heart had not been beating.
"What did you do to me?"
Ramon whispered, horror-struck.
"What the fuck did you do to me? To my body?"
"Ah, interesting," Manek said. "You are capable of Kahatane. This may not serve us well. I doubt the man is capable of multiple integration, and even if he were, it would not produce this disorientation. You must take care not to diverge.
It will not focus your Tata Kroida if you become too much unlike the man."
"What are you talking about, monster?"
"Your distress," Manek said. "You are becoming aware of who you are."
"I am Ramon Espejo."
"No," the alien said. "You are not."
Chapter 9. Ramon, if he was Ramon, squatted, his elbows resting on his knees, hands wrapped around his bowed head. Manek, looming beside him, explained in its deep, sorrowful voice. The man who had discovered the alien hive had been Ramon Espejo. There had been no one following him, no constable, no other van from the south. The discovery of the nest in itself had constituted contradiction, and in order to correct the illusion that the man existed, he had been attacked. He had escaped, but not uninjured. An appendage, a finger, had been torn from him in the attack. That flesh had acted as the seed for the creation of a made thing, I, Euthaloi, that had participated in the original being's flow and woken with Ramon's memory and knowledge. Manek had to explain twice before Ramon truly understood that it meant him.
"You participate in his flow," Manek said. "All of the whole is present in the fragment, and the fragment may express the whole. There was some loss of fidelity, and the decision was made to favor functional knowledge and immediate recall over precise physical approximation. As you progress, you collapse into the form that shaped the fragment."
"I am Ramon Espejo," Ramon said, "and you are a lying whore with breath like a Russian's asshole."
"Both of these things are incorrect," Manek said patiently.
"You're lying."
"The language you use is not a proper thing. The function of communication is to transmit knowledge. To lie would fail to transmit knowledge. That is not possible."
Ramon's face went hot, then cold.
"You're lying," he whispered.
"No," the alien said sadly. "You are a made thing."
Ramon surged to his feet, but Manek didn't step back. The great orange eyes flickered.
"I am Ramon Espejo," Ramon shouted. "I flew that van out here. I set the charges. Me! I am the one that did that. I'm not some fucking finger grown in a fucking vat."
"You are becoming agitated," Manek said. "Contain your anger, or I will use the pain."
"Use it!" Ramon shouted. "Go on, you coward! Are you afraid of me?"
He gathered saliva in his mouth and spit full into Manek's face. The glob of spittle struck the alien beneath one eye and ran slowly down the side of his face. Manek seemed more puzzled than offended, displaying none of the normal human revulsion. It wiped the spit away carefully and stared at the wetness of its fingers.
"What is the meaning of this action?" it asked. "I sense that this substance is not venomous. Does it have a function?"
All the fight went out of Ramon, like air rushing from a pricked balloon. "Wipe your face, pendejo," he whispered, and then sank to a crouch, wrapping his arms around his knees. It was true. He was an abomination. Cold sweat broke out on his forehead, his armpits, the back of his knees. He was coming to believe what Manek had said. He was not the real Ramon Espejo. He wasn't even really human. He was some monster born in a vat, an unnatural thing only 3 days old. Everything he remembered was false, had happened to some other man, not to him. He'd never been out of the mountain before. Never broken heads in a bar fight, never fucked a woman. He'd never even met a real human being, in spite of his memories of all the people he thought he knew. How he wished he had never come here, never set that fateful charge. And then he realized that he had not done any of those things. It had been the other who had done them. All of the past belonged to the other. He had nothing but the present. Nothing but Manek and surrounding forest. He was nothing. He was nobody. He was a stranger to the world. The thought was vertiginous, almost unthinkable, and deliberately, with an enormous effort of will, he put it aside. To think deeply about it would lead to madness. Instead, he concentrated on the physical world around him, the cold wind in his face, the clouds scuttling through an ominous indigo sky. Whoever or whatever he was alive, out in the world, reacting to it with animal intensity. The ice root smelled as good as his false memories said it should. The wind felt as cool and refreshing as it swept across the meadow. The immense vista of the Sierra Hueso on the far horizon, sun flashing off the snow caps on the highest peaks, was as beautiful as it ever was, and the beauty of it lifted his heart, as it always did. The body keeps on living, he thought bitterly, even when we do not wish it to. He forced the thought from his mind. He couldn't afford despair if he was going to survive. Nothing had changed, regardless of his origin. Whether he'd been grown in a pot like a chili pepper, or popped bloody and screaming out of his mother's womb. He was Ramon Espejo, no matter what the alien said, no matter what his hands looked like. He had to be, because there was no one else to be. What difference did it make if there was another man out there that also thought that he was him, or 100 such? He was alive, right here and now, in this instant, whether he was 3 days old or 30 years. And that was what mattered. He was alive, and he intended to stay that way. He looked up at the alien, who was waiting with surprising patience. "How can what you say be true?" Ramon said through tight lips. "I'm not an ignorant peasant. I know what a clone is. It's just a baby that has to grow up, like every baby. It wouldn't have my memories. It doesn't work like that."
"You know nothing of what we can and cannot do," Manek chided. "And yet you assert otherwise. You refer to the creation of a novel individual from a similar gross molecular template. That process would be development. You are the expression of recapitulation. The two are dissimilar."
Manek paused.
"The thought fits poorly in your language, but if you were to gain enough ataka to understand it fully, you would diverge further from the model. It interferes with our tata kroida."
"My belly, my arm, the scars I had."
"Perfect fidelity was sacrificed. As time progresses, they will tend toward the forms that express the whole."
"I'll get my scars back."
"All of your physical systems will continue to approximate the source form. The information retrieval is similarly progressing."
"My memory. You're saying that all this is fucking with my memory, too?"
"To better approximate is to better approximate," it said. "This is self-evident."
Ramon stared at Manek. All at once, he realized why the aliens didn't have sex. They were grown in vats, too, just like he had been. Maybe they'd been created in the same one. He and this ugly son of a bitch were brothers, more alike than either of them were like the real Ramon Espejo. "You've made me a monster, just like you," he said bitterly, feeling himself beginning to shake again. "I'm not even human anymore." The Sahel pulsed once, as if in warning, and Ramon's belly went cold and tight with fear. But the pain didn't come. Instead, to Ramon's great surprise, my neck extended one long, oddly jointed arm and placed its hand awkwardly on Ramon's shoulder, like a gesture of comfort copied from a bad description.
"You are a living creature, possessed of rete hue," it said. "Your origin is of no consequence, and you should not concern yourself with it. You may still fulfill your tatakroida by exercising your function. No living being can aspire to more than that."
This was close enough to his earlier thoughts to give him pause. He pushed the thing's arm away and stood up. The Sahel thinned and extended, letting him walk some distance away. Surprising Ramon again, Manek made no attempt to follow. At the fire pit, Ramon sat, taking the cigarette case from the ground, flipping it open. It was the nearest thing he'd had to a mirror since he'd been lifted from the vat. His face was smoother than the one he was accustomed to, fewer lines at the corners of his eyes. The moles and scars were gone. His hair was finer and lighter. He looked different. Unformed. He looked young. He looked like himself, but also not. The world threatened to whirl around him again, and he steadied himself with his hands, his palms against the solid ground of Sao Paulo, anchoring himself in reality, anchoring himself in the present. If what my neck had revealed was true, if there was another Ramon Espejo out there, that changed everything. There was no advantage to stalling anymore. If the other Ramon returned to Fiddler's Jump, there might be a reaction to his story of a secret alien base, sure. But neither that other Ramon nor anyone else would have any idea that he existed. An armed party might come to follow up or even attack the aliens, but they wouldn't be looking for him. Maybe if he could actually find that other Ramon, though, together they could somehow turn the tables on the alien. He knew what he himself would have done if he knew he were being hunted. He would have found a way to kill his hunters. And that, now, was Ramon's only chance. If he could alert the other Ramon that he was being pursued and trust him to take the right action, together they might destroy the alien that held his leash. For a moment, he hoped deeply that what Manek had said was the truth, that there was another mind like his own out, free, in the wilderness. He felt an odd surge of pride in that other Ramon. In spite of these monsters and all the powers at their command, he had gotten away from them, fooled them, showed them what a man could do. But would the other Ramon help him? Or would he be as horrified by him as he was by the alien? If he helped the other Ramon escape from his pursuers, surely the other Ramon would be grateful. Ramon tried to imagine himself turning away someone who had come to his aid when he was most in need. He didn't believe it was a thing he would do. He would embrace this new man like a brother, hide him, help him, set him up in business, maybe go into business with him. Ramon spat. That was bullshit. No. Instead, he put a knife between